What an excellent day for an exorcism.
That is dangerous. He's a liar. The demon is a liar.
Hello, everybody. My name is Peter Laws, and I'd like to welcome you back to the Flicks the Church Forgot for another dive into spiritually frightening stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws, or why not join me in the Facebook page, The Flicks the Church Forgot, or email at contactus@theflickstherchurchforgot.com. But for now, we're going to be digging into a series of episodes looking at one of the most fundamental places in the movies where the scary and the sacred mix. It's the possession genre. Yes, I'm going to be going to review a whole bunch of horror films where demonic possession is the central theme. But then in the final episode, we'll be looking into the reality of this subject, asking if demonic possession actually happens today, or if it just, and perhaps always will be, a misdiagnosis of mental illness. Just the other week, I attended a day conference in London exploring this subject from the point of view of psychologists, skeptics, occultists, anthropologists, sociologists, and spirit mediums, and so I'll be unpacking what they shared and some of my own thoughts in the final episode. But for now, come into this house, follow me up the stairs, and come into this room at the far end of the corridor, because there's a person in there who seems to have a little bit more than a head cold. Welcome to the scary, sweary world of the demonic possession movie.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. A world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter.
The one hope.
I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind.
The only hope.
You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
Warner Brothers presents William Peter Blatty's The Exorcist. The Exorcist, directed by William Friedkin.
It would be kind of odd to do a podcast on exorcism movies without at least mentioning the film that really set the dark ball rolling. I'm not going to say a massive amount about this film because I actually dedicated an entire podcast to it way back in the Halloween episode of 2009. Wow, I sometimes forget how long this podcast's been going for. But yes, if you want a more in-depth view of that, then check that out. It's in episode 18 and spills into episode 19 too as a discussion of devil movies in general. But safe to say that The Exorcist really divides opinion, let's put it that way. Many Christian groups who claimed it was a repulsive vehicle of Satanism just wanted the film banned. Indeed, Billy Graham, the evangelist, reportedly said that evil existed within the very celluloid of the film itself. Though it's important to say that there's actually no source I can find that actually said he said that, other than I think the director William Friedkin. Friedkin heard Graham say that and then shared that with the world. So who knows if he really said it, but that idea certainly sums up the opinions of many Christians that I've met who've said the film is simply evil. The film certainly divides audiences, with many Christians in one camp shunning it while droves flock to see its frightening and relentless portrayal of a young girl possessed by the devil. But it wasn't long until some Christians, and particularly the Catholic Church, started to see something valuable and worthwhile in the film. Perhaps this is not surprising because it's one of the few films that paints the church as not so much part of the problem, but is in fact the only solution in this regard, in this situation. So many Christians are presented in films as corrupt, as out of touch, or hypocritical, or even evil. But the priests in The Exorcist are refreshing, particularly Father Damien Karras, played by Jason Miller, because he may well be a priest, but he is a rationalist too. He's struggling with faith, and yet when he's presented with the supernatural evil in full effect, it both destroys and saves him in an odd way. The priests are intelligent, everyday people, but not only that, they're heroic and they're sacrificial. There's this powerful picture of Jesus in those guys, which I think helps give the film its emotional clout, and is actually a very unusual thing where you come out of a film and you think, wow, the priests in that were the heroes. The makeup, of course, the direction and the sound design are all fantastic at pushing you into a sense of unease as well. But the film is divisive in the sense that, well, put it this way, I've got various film books on my shelf, and one book I have in particular, it's a really interesting one, is called The Satanic Screen by an author called Nicholas Schreck. Now, he's a Satanist himself, and so he's able to give a really helpful perspective for people like me on films like this. And while he doesn't deny the cultural impact of the film, he does think that the Exorcist film is pretty lame. And rather than be one of the most frightening films ever made, he says, and I quote, "I must admit that I've always found the Exorcist one of the most laughable presentations of the devil on screen." And in some senses, even though I do love The Exorcist, he does have a point in the sense that the devil in The Exorcist seems surprisingly juvenile and without much vision. In The Exorcist, the devil is more like a mischievous poltergeist spirit than, say, the strategic evil of the Antichrist in The Omen. In The Omen, he's born into a politician's family with a view to affect world affairs. He's got big plans for world domination. Whereas in The Exorcist, he just wants to swear a lot and puke in people's faces. Now, I don't know if this is just Satan's idea of a night out or something, or a way of letting off steam, and so now again, he takes some time off from his world domination plans and sort of just freaks families out. But, you know, it's an interesting point nonetheless. Like, what is the devil playing at doing something in this situation with Reagan McNeil? Or maybe it's simply that the devil is just so desirous of pain and torment, he will do anything he can to cause pain on a large scale and a small scale. Schreck makes a good point. That's Nicholas Schreck, not Schreck the Green Guy. Schreck points out that the real-life Zodiac killer who terrorized San Francisco in the 70s, he sent a message to the police in 1974. He said that The Exorcist was the best satirical comedy I have ever seen, end quote. I think the power of The Exorcist, therefore, depends on your upbringing and your background. I didn't have a church background myself growing up, but I was in a country at a time when Christianity may well have been mocked or deemed irrelevant, certainly by me at the time, but it was still present, and it was certainly the closest religious worldview to me. It still is, of course. And I think the reason I found The Exorcist scary and in some ways revelatory was because I had these religious buttons in me ready to be pressed by this particular film. But I think it's helpful to have a critical eye over it too, because for some, like I've already said, it's a bit of a joke. But The Exorcist is not a joke for me. I think it's a very finely made film and quite a profound one that has had a profound effect on my faith, on my religion, or in some senses, I would say it was one of the doorways into having faith. While we're talking about The Exorcist, by the way, let's just have a quick mention of the sequels. Exorcist 2 has been largely hated and laughed at by audiences, yet while I think it's nowhere near as good as the original, it also has a few interesting images that stick in my mind even to this day. The aerial shots of locusts or whatever they were flying over African villages, the woman in the white robe going up in flames and not seeming bothered while Richard Burton stares on in shock, and the bit at the end when a taxi driver crashes a car and I'm convinced I've got a memory of a steering wheel being embedded in his throat. Now, I haven't seen this film in ages, but those images are still in my mind. Oh, and the soundtrack by Ennio Morricone to The Exorcist 2 is a brilliant album with freaky devil music alongside sweet elevator music. It's really worth picking up. The CD is available from Perseverance Records. The Exorcist 3 was a good film too, although there was something about Brad Dourif's role in that that didn't completely satisfy me, as I recall. The best scene, of course, here was the long shot of the hospital corridor as the nurse is suddenly set upon by a weird guy in a white hood holding a giant pair of scissors. If you've seen that, you'll know full well that that scene is pretty blinking inspired. Exorcist The Beginning, the fourth film, I've seen that more recently than the other sequels, but it probably tells you a great deal about it, the fact that I simply cannot barely remember anything about that film, and I'm not bothered to check it out again. So, let's move on from The Exorcist, but then let's not totally move on from it, because now we're going to look at a Turkish film which bears more than a passing resemblance to William Friedkin's horror phenomenon. We're now going to look at Satan from 1974.
Merhaba Ekrem. Nerelerdesin? Gene kayıplara karıştın.
Ben de sana gelmek istiyordum.
Bekleyin.
The Exorcist wasn't the first film that depicted demonic possession. Just a few years earlier, in 1971, Ken Russell brought out his controversial film The Devils, which explored demonic possession in France. But Friedkin's Exorcist was certainly the film that put the classic exorcism narrative into place. Young victim starts acting strangely, doctor's help is sought, the church is called in. It's a demonic possession, that's the usual pattern. And once the Exorcist puts that narrative structure out, scores and scores of films repeat the same plot line even to this day. However, if you're looking for a film that is so influenced by The Exorcist that it's pretty much a remake, then look no further than Metin Erskine's 1973 or 74 film, Satan. It's the story of, wait for it, a 12-year-old girl named Ghoul and her well-to-do mother. Ghoul or Ghoul, I can't remember exactly how you pronounce it, plays around with a Ouija board and ends up being possessed by the devil. Now, when I say this is a remake, I mean in the sense that this is like a photocopy of the original film, even down to the unauthorized use of tubular bells in the opening credits. So many scenes from Friedkin's movie are simply repeated and ripped off here. Like the opening scene of the exorcist priest in the desert who encounters the evil-looking demonic statue made of stone. Now in The Exorcist, this is really well done and we're introduced to Pazuzu, a real-life figure who is the ancient king of the demons in Assyrian and Babylonian mythology. Now in all of these, the statues and depictions that I've seen of Pazuzu, and weirdly I've seen a fair few depictions of Pazuzu in my time, he sort of stands there with his wings and a scary face and one arm up in the air as if in blessing, albeit a demonic blessing, I assume. But in the Turkish version, Pazuzu is a sort of papier-mâché ghost train monster with not one but two wonky arms sticking up for a scare like a "boo, I'm scary." It's really quite funny. And as the film progresses, we get countless scenes directly lifted from The Exorcist with very, very negligible variations. For example, in the original, Reagan was contacting an entity called Captain Howdy through the Ouija board. And just as an aside, I always found the name Captain Howdy to be really unsettling in the sense that it sounded like this friendly kids TV star who was enticing Reagan in through the Ouija board, and I just thought that was really creepy. In Satan, sounds weird saying it like that, but it's spelled S-E-Y-T-A-N. In Satan, Ghoul sits at a really odd-looking Ouija board with her mum, talking about how she's been chatting to an entity called Captain Lursen or Larson. And then later we see the classic scene of the shifting noises in the attic while the mum goes up to investigate, and the dinner party even, where everyone plays and sings around the piano. Just like in The Exorcist, Ghoul appears in the stairs and urinates on the carpet. Later, her neck bulges like a bullfrog at one point. The writing appears on the skin. It also has the obligatory scene, later repeated in blaxploitation exorcist movie called Abby, which we're going to come to later. It has the scene of Ghoul being taken to hospital and being subjected to the barbaric machinery of modern science. This was always a great, wonderful scene in The Exorcist. One of the scariest scenes in some sense, where Regan McNeil is taken to the hospital and she is placed under the care and the investigations of the hospital team, and what she has to go through, the machines that just sort of make these horrible clanking pneumatic noises around her, is just horrifying, and she's sitting there like crying in the midst of it. It's a really powerful scene. And so this is repeated in Abby, and it's repeated also in Ghoul. In Satan, as Ghoul is going through it. But in this one, Ghoul is sort of lying on the hospital bed while she has these like pneumatic pistons like fired repeatedly and noisily right into her temples. And in one sense, it's horrible, but at the other, it's like laugh out loud funny at the same time. It's funny. In short, then, Satan makes absolutely no qualms about ripping the original film off. Now, Satan, if you're interested, was part of a popular move in Turkish cinema between the 60s and 80s called Yelikam, which means green pine. And these were a bunch of films with storylines completely lifted from blockbuster American movies. So they put out a version of popular films like, say, Buddy, which is their version of E.T., or The Man Who Saved the World, which is effectively the Turkish Star Wars, although admittedly with a different plot, just the same music and effects. But one of the reasons they made so many of these knockoff films is because it was so expensive to distribute the original American versions to some of the smaller cinemas that were scattered across Turkey. some of which were, you know, up in the Anatolian countryside. And so it was actually cheaper for Turkish directors to do their own versions and distribute them that way. Meaning that many Turks saw Satan long before they ever saw The Exorcist, which they might have seen and thought, wow, if they'd seen The Exorcist later, and probably would have thought, whoa, Warner Brothers movie is such a rip-off of Satan that we saw like years ago. Also, the fact that this is Turkey doing a version of The Exorcist brings up some interesting reflections on worldviews. In the US, Christianity is the prominent part of the national identity, and so a film about Christian or Catholic priests battling the devil makes a kind of sense in that culture. However, in Turkey, Islam is the largest religion, with anything from 96.4% to 99.8% of the population being registered as Muslim. So the heavy religious element of The Exorcist was going to look very out of place in a Turkish rendition. Hence, it's no surprise to see that the Catholicism has been largely removed from the film, and instead Father Karras' character is played by a psychologist. Then, when finally he realizes that this is like the devil or something we're dealing with, the religious man turns up, you know, the guy who was looking at Pazuzu at the beginning. And I'm guessing this man's an imam. I mean, he's got some Zamzam water with him, apparently, which is Muslim holy water, which is taken from a well in Mecca. Anyway, the production values of Satan are undoubtedly like light years below The Exorcist. The papier-mâché Pazuzu aside, I do remember laughing out loud when we first see Ghoul's bedroom. It's sparse and it's so obviously a set. It looks like an amateur dramatic stage with a large central bed that is clearly ready for some strange shenanigans and is oversized because you know there's some sort of mechanics underneath that bed that's going to make it shake. And when the crazy stuff does start happening, it's with crudity, which is sometimes quite amusing. Like the scene in The Exorcist where Reagan is being thrown up and down on the bed repeatedly and the mother runs in, Ellen Burstyn, and she's horrified. But here, Ghoul is bounced up and down in a way that looks like really fun. And yet the mum comes in and then she screams in utter terror. In the end, you could say that Satan was an utter waste of time, but I'm not so quick to write it off. It doesn't even touch The Exorcist, but I just like the idea that a remote village in Turkey still got the chance to wander into a local cinema and see a scary-ish kid throwing grown-ups around and puking in their faces. Although the puke in this is decidedly less explosive, the language is a lot less offensive, and the picture quality is a lot more yellow. It looks like you're viewing this whole film through a weird urine filter on the lens. So who knows, maybe the vomit in this actually was green during the production like the original Exorcist, but on the screen it's all mustard-coloured. Look, we're getting too into the specifics now. Look, in this version of the Satan I saw as well, the subtitles are wild. Like, they appear to have parts where the person writing the subtitles comments on the subtitles, like footnotes with asterisks and leaves them in the shot. It's really weird. I've never ever seen that before. Satan, then, is probably a good film to sit down with some mates and have a beer, or the ideal addition for the Exorcist completist. But for me, as a very ropey and unintentionally funny horror movie, I found it a quite endearing Muslim ripoff of the Christian horror classic. Well, that's it for the first episode in this demonic possession series. Join me next time when I'm going to be exploring a film called Beyond the Door and also The Possession from 2012. But until then, don't forget the flicks the church forgot.